and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Each week, we'll be joined by guests from the financial services world to discuss the most pressing industry issues. I'm Amy Austin, news editor at FT Advisor, and today I will be discussing how the advice profession can attract young advisors with Derek Bradley, Chief Executive Officer at Panacea Advisor, and Tim Morris, an IFA at Russell & Co. Thank you both for joining us today. So, as we know, we're getting to the stage where soon we're going to have a raft of advisors looking to retire and either sell up or pass on their businesses. However, it's looking like there may not be enough young people coming into the profession at this moment in time to plug the gap. So, Tim, maybe we can start with you. Why do you think more young people aren't kind of considering a career in advice?
Very good question, Amy. You know, for me, I think the big problem is the lack of roots into financial advice. And, you know, for a number of years, I've been thinking that if we want it seen as a profession on the same standing as, you know, a lawyer or accountant, then surely there should be some kind of degree to help people, you know, into the career. And so, you know, yes, you can study, you know, finance, and I did lots of financial modules as part of my degrees, business economics, but it wasn't a direct route into financial advice, and it was through a family member really how you know, I had that link into the profession. So for me, a lot needs to be done, and there is work happening, and there's a lot more academies you know, that are popping up, and yeah, that's great, but it's nowhere near enough at the moment, so still a lot of work to be done.
Sure. And what about you, Derek? What are you, why do you think that young people are kind of staying away?
I think one needs to sort of build a little bit on what Tim was mentioning there in terms of sort of entry routes, and clearly sort of Tim and I are a bit of a generation apart from one another, but sometimes because of that it does enable you know, a generation that's sort of gone before to be able to see maybe where things could be better with the benefit of hindsight and so on. And I think when I first started in this industry, and this is a very long time ago, in the sort of very, very early 70s, I was in the Lloyd's market, and there wasn't a requirement particularly to have any degree of qualification. And as my sort of time in the industry went on, in fact, I had a bit of a sabbatical and came back to it in the early 80s, I went to work for what was then a sort of a traditional life company. And I think it'd be fair to say that the generation that's kind of retiring, dying, or whatever, in terms of their sort of engagement with the industry, the bulk of the people that have relationships in terms of distribution, in terms of how they became financial advisors and so on, has really gone back to the life companies. And as just so many of them were starting in, you know, companies like Legal & General, like Prudential, whatever, and maybe perhaps broker consultants. They would have a lot of involvement with brokers, clients, as it was at that stage, and so on. And it did build up a significant experience that can be used. And from my own point of view, after a period of time doing that, I took a view that I wanted to be a financial advisor myself, and started up my own business. Now, I did have qualifications towards the end of this, but the beginning I didn't, and I don't know, looking back, whether that actually made me a better or worse advisor, because ultimately it's how your clients react to you. And I think it'd be fair to say as well that I was looking up some numbers on from the FCA register in terms of people that are new to the register and have been new to the register over the last, since the beginning of the year. And the number is 6,558. Now, that's with less than 1 year's experience in the industry. So some of those, because of the various categories, will be advisors. But holistic financial planners, which are the sort of the normal smaller to IFA type firms, there were 1,166 of them there. So Clearly they are coming in, but I think other ways need to be found to actually make it more attractive. And I think from Tim's perspective, I think it's anyone that's got the levels of qualification that they have today, which is significant, and I think quite impressive from what I see. It may well be that apprenticeships might be another route to actually going in, because not everyone is necessarily equipped academically, although you would assume it would help. But it doesn't, it's a people business as well. And I think dealing with clients is something that, no matter how many qualifications you have, if you haven't got that interaction and empathy with the clients you're trying to support, then it's not going to work.
Yeah, definitely.
I think like apprenticeships and the advice profession kind of go hand in hand. I think, you know, to become an advisor, an apprenticeship is a really great route to go down, you know, like learning on the job and then doing your qualifications at the same time. I think it's a really great thing. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely agree. And Derek made some very good points. And mentioning about the live companies, I guess the next step was where I came in, was through your banks. And, you haven't got those. I mean, you mentioned Lloyds, but, I had quite a few friends working for Lloyds Bank, the High Street Bank, and I was at HSBC. And, quite a few of the guys, I knew from back then, I still keep in touch with now. That route's pretty much gone. But for me, the whole thing of at the qualifications is, Derek's right. There is a lot to do there, as you know as well, Amy, and it takes a lot of time and commitment and cost as well. And actually, a lot of advice firms, especially the smaller firms, aren't willing to, take on that investment, not just monetary, but also time-wise, because it's a long time to, A, get through all of your exams. You're talking, probably a year to get all your R papers done, and then some people can do it a bit quicker, some people a bit longer, but then after that it's learning all the skills of the job. And so those soft skills that Derek mentioned are vitally important, but are lacking because you haven't got the people skills, and I didn't until you then start actually doing the job. You've got to learn that on the job, and that's shadowing other advisors and learning from people who've done the job for years and years. And I had that benefit, but not all advisors are willing or able to give the time to do that. So I was in a fortunate position, but unless you've got that support structure around you, it is very difficult. So I've seen advisors come in and leave because of the fact that they haven't got that support structure, and it's a shame really to be losing a lot of good talent.
I think the other thing, talking about kind of small firms, is when I've been speaking to people, they're a bit apprehensive to take on young trainees because of the likes of the big firms out there, the SJPs, the Quilters, the likes of them then coming to their firm and they're their young advisor and saying, hey, look at us, this is how much we can offer you. And then them jumping ship. And I think for young advisors, this is for small advisors, this is like a very big worry, because a lot of time and a lot of money has then been kind of invested in this person who then ups and leaves. And I'm not saying that's everyone, but it does happen. We've seen it happens across all industries, unfortunately. What would you kind of say to that, Derek? Do you think that advisors may just, have to take the plunge and kind of invest in young trainees? Otherwise, how is this ever going to get resolved?
Well, I've done it myself when I had an advisory business, and that is quite a long time ago now. But certainly we had 10 people in the firm. It was a fairly general IFA practice, and it's only had two people. After these people had sort of got all the experience and qualifications that they needed, they just went somewhere else, which is I think rather sad. I think also I think for any firm that's taking on someone like this, a route now with some firms, I think, having been involved recently in sort of some paraplanner activity, that paraplanners seems to be an interesting way to come in for those that are sort of more academically minded on there, and they can build on those people skills. But then ultimately, I think there can also be a bias between age and experience And I have a financial advisor. He's about probably mid-50s. I think it will be fair to say.
Typical age.
To listen to him. I'm sorry?
That's the typical age, I think, of an advisor.
Yeah, it is rather, yeah. But, is someone who's sort of just come out of school or just come out of university full of a world view of just everything is ideal? It's very difficult to accept advice, and that is, I think, age versus experience. Now, I also think that there is a big problem in very general terms, and from Tim's sort of practitioner perspective, I'm sure it's something that you would understand. For years and years and years, a big hindrance, I think, to people being involved in this now profession is the cost of the regulation to do it. And unfortunately, the way in which regulation is set up, it's always the advice, it's never the product. And so from an advisor's perspective, from the minute you start putting young people in front of clients, then that's where the troubles can begin. And I think, although a lot of people may strongly disagree with it, I think the time really has come for the industry to do an about face. And as far as the advisors are concerned, when the sort of blame is being laid at the door of the person that gave the advice, ultimately the advice, because we are a strange profession or industry in that it's sort of intellectual input in terms of advice, rather than you're building a product, making a product, selling a product. There's nothing tangible in terms of the end results on this. And so I think there needs to be more emphasis on the manufacturer of the bit of kit that the advisor says, well, this is, I think, the thing for you. Because it's only when something fails that all the issues over redress start. And say it may well be about the advice, but ultimately it ends up being about the product that somebody's unhappy with, because for whatever reason it suited them when the advice was given, but maybe performance or something like that, or their life's aims and aspirations have changed. It's the regulation is so easy now for the advisor to be on the receiving end of something that really isn't their fault.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think kind of maybe the institutes need to do more to kind of, you know, promote advice as a career, you know, to the younger generation? Because I know, like, back when I was at school, uni, advice was never once mentioned. Like, I didn't know.
Mm.
I mean, I was, you know, aware that there was probably someone who could help me on my finances out there. But I think if I was to go to anyone, I'd be like, oh, it would be an accountant, because that's what I'd always heard of and what I'd always knew. Yeah. I was never told, you know, there's this career called like financial advice, and it's a really good one, because, you know, it should be promoted more by, you know, the likes of the CII, CISI. You know, it's very flexible. You can have a work-life balance. You can make a good like living, and it's, you know, down to you kind of how much you want to work and make. And I think that needs to be peddled more to young people. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, going back to my point earlier, you know, saying that, you know, there's no easy route into, you know, no structured route for study for getting into the profession. And yeah, historically that wasn't needed. But the whole thing of, you know, having some kind of university course, or, you know, but you made a very good point. It's when you go to a careers fair, you're not going to have a stall there for financial advice, you know. So yeah, you'll have accountants next to sort of law firms, and then, you know, there's a gap there in the middle where we should be. And you know, I can't see that changing anytime soon, unfortunately. But you know, you're right as well. We need the professional bodies behind us to promote this, and yeah, I do think that is lacking, unfortunately. And you know, whether that's going to change anytime soon, I really don't know. But it'd be great to see it if it does, and you know, it does need to happen quickly. But at the moment, there's been a lot of change at the, you know, with the CII and the funding, and with the PFS and how it's going to work, and, you know, having a, you know, full time, you know, chief exec. We need that stability and structure there as well. So that will filter down. But yeah, there's a lot of work for, I think it has to come from the bigger advice firms. So for me, I got into financial advice, as I said, through working as a bank, but as a graduate on their graduate scheme. And part of what that offered me was the ability to move into some kind of advice role. And it was quite structured, which was good because you can start off by, you know, working with lower end clients or even advising. Well, it started on protection and then you move to investments once you've got that experience and the ability to deal with clients, because at the end of the day, it's like any advice firm, your investment clients are valuable clients, and there's a lot more complexity to understanding exactly how everything works. So, you know, in a granular way, it's a case of, you know, if we're breaking it down, it's saying when you're sitting in front of that client, you've got to be confident. And yeah, as you said, you're not going to have that confidence until you've got that experience, and that, you know, more firms need to be offering that route, whether it's through academies or however they can provide that support structure.
Sure. I mean, we're definitely kind of seeing more academies pop up. You know, M&G Wealth have kind of, they're quite new to the market with their academy. Yeah. And I'm definitely seeing more and more of them kind of, you know, come about and promote themselves a bit more. But, you know, when you speak about, you know, the likes of M&G and Quilter and that, you'll immediately go to investments. Like, you know, when I speak to people that don't really know much about advice, they're like, oh, they're the big investment companies. I'm like, yeah, but they also do advice. And like, a lot of people don't realize that. So maybe education is what's key to kind of push the profession. I don't know what you think about this, Derek.
I think that this might sound a slightly flippant comment, but it's not sexy.
Not enough, anyway.
No. And I think when you're talking about young people coming into the business, when I started my IFA practice, I'm trying to see how old it was, about 33 or 34, I think it was. Now, I'm sure people do start, you know, business as well, that sort of age. But it's one thing, I think, having new advisors come into the business or industry or profession, but what are their aspirations there? So do they just see themselves as a financial advisor from, you know, the beginning to end of their career? So are they sort of just a journeyman, or are they someone who has aims and aspirations to create something of value? And from Tim's point of view, I'd imagine, you know, that was a driver for you doing what you do. And yeah, that step is really, really difficult, I think, now. And some of the biggest obstacles in terms of anyone setting up a business is that, once again, regulation and the cost of it. You can have someone set up a business today and then suddenly get hit with a massive, great FSCS call or something like that, can sort of wipe them out within months because they haven't got the resources behind them on that. So I think there are two aspects to this: getting new blood into the industry, but new firms, I think, it costs a lot of money these days. And also, I think, buying back to when I started, I can remember I had no clients at all. I hadn't been an IFA. I didn't have any ways to get clients or anything like that. I just had this in my mind that this is what I wanted to do. And the way I went about it was from a marketing perspective and advertising. And that helped me get going. But for a lot of people, I think when you've got advisors, whether they're, you know, trainees or whatever, they need to be finding a way not only to get the experience, to earn the money. And because this is a fee-based industry predominantly, if you put protection or whatever to one side or mortgages. And I think for anyone who may well be new and wanting to start their own business, to get that flow of fees from the thing would be that you might leave a firm and take that client bank with you, which we've heard all sorts of horror stories off the back of that over the years. So I think Certainly, there are other aspects I think that need to be looking at this to encourage people.
Sure. Well, yeah. Derek, we'll finish up there for today. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next week to hear the latest goings on in the industry.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.